Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, all the Eastern family and friends, welcome to the EAO Radio Show. We're coming to you live from many different locations. That's what is so amazing with cyber broadcasting. Our hosts and listeners are in many locations, but come together as one every Monday at this time. We're glad you're listening, and we hope you will join in on the discussion. Our producer, Neil, has mentioned that our little radio show is kitchen table radio. Perhaps it does sound a little homespun with the lack of all the sophisticated radio equipment the big guys have, but it seems to be working all right. I think the biggest reason for its popularity is the subject we cover, and that is Eastern Airlines. Eastern has always been an airline of firsts. And the radio show is carrying on that tradition, as we're sure the new Eastern will continue to do so. With each show that goes into our radio broadcast archive, it tells us, your host, that Eastern people enjoy talking and hearing about the old and the new, as we like to think of our beloved Eastern Airlines. We hope you will participate and board our plane, a beautiful Boeing 737-800, smartly painted in the familiar paint livery of the old Eastern. Every Monday at this time, and please be part of the show. For those listening to the broadcast on their computers, all you need to do is call us at 213-816-1611, and it will put you on Neil's producer's board. He can open your mic or your telephone, and you can tell us what's on your mind, or you might want to add to the subject being discussed. Now, please remember, unless Neil has opened your phone connection to join the live conversation, you'll need to press number 1 on your phone's keypad to join in. Those who cannot listen in on a computer can still hear and participate by just calling the number you just heard, 213-816-1611. Also, keep in mind that your telephone or microphone picks up any noises that might be in the background, so make sure you mute your phone or keep as quiet as possible during the broadcast. Now, let's join Flight 255 as it pulls away from the gate at the Miami International Airport.
Eastern Flight 254, you're cleared for takeoff.
Miami Tower Eastern 254, Roger, and we're cleared to go.
Our show tonight is about today, February 29th. Have you ever wondered why we have leap year? Or exactly what it means for people born on that day? Here are 5 fun, if complicated, facts to bring you up to speed on the most unusual day of the year. why does leap year exist? Steve, how about filling us in on this?
Certainly, Neil, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Leap year is the reason that seasons occur at the same time each year. According to the Honor Society of Leap Year Day Babies, the Earth takes 365.24 days to make a complete cycle around the sun. So every 4 years, therefore, the world would be a full day out of sync with the calendar. The society says a person who lived to be 90 would see their birthday drift by 3 weeks over the course of their lifetime. One extra day added to the end of February every 4 years prevents this from happening. Now, here's how it works. According to Irv Broomberg at the University of Toronto, the Gregorian calendar has a 400-year repeat cycle in which every year, numbered divisible by 4, 2016, for example, has a leap year added to February, except in the year numbered by divisible by 100, in which case it is a leap year only if the year number is also divisible by 400. For instance, the year 2000 was a leap year, while 1900 was not. Got that? Now, pay attention, because we're all going to have to take a test on this. Chuck.
There are drawbacks of being born in leap year, the 29th. The estimated 5 million people with February the 29th birthdays, also known as leapers, once had to face the number of day-to-day administrative hassles, according to the society. Insurance companies, banks, other major organizations often didn't recognize leap year as a valid date, forcing people to choose either February the 28th or March the 1st as their birthday. Evolving technology has made this less of an issue, but some websites still don't accept February the 29th. Some leapers also complain that companies offering birthday promotions don't wind up delivering those for those born on the extra day. Also, there's some cultural traditions evolved around the leap year. While the origin of the tradition is unknown, Leap Day became the day on which women of several different cultures were allowed to propose to men rather than waiting to be asked. Some folklore has it that a man was supposed to compensate a woman if he turned her down an offer or marriage. Compensation could include everything from silks to kisses. The society insists, though, that this shouldn't be confused with a similar theme, Sadie Hawkins Day, which takes place on November the 15th. Don or Dorothy?
Yeah, Donald here. Here's a few celebrity leapers, in case you didn't know. According to society, there have been a handful of famous leapers. Some have strong Canadian ties. These include General Louis Joseph de Maclame, who was defeated during the Battle of the Plains of Abraham, looms in large Canadian history. Others include actress Dinah Shore, film director William Wellman, who produced the movie called Wings, became the first ever Best Picture Award, and rapper LaRue, I cannot pronounce the name, I'm sorry.
Ja Rule.
Several Canadian hockey players also celebrated February 29th birthdays, including Henry Richard, brother of the legendary star Maurice Rocket Richard, Kim Ward, and Simon Gagné, Bastou dancer Tempest Storm Diana Shore, Pope Paul III, and let's find out what happened to the rest of them. through the Eastern years, starting in 1928. I do apologize for anybody who speaks French for my poor pronunciation of some of these names. Go ahead,
well, before Dorothy, I would say one that I remember of all the ones that you just mentioned was burlesque dancer Tempest Storm.
How do you remember
us? How do you know that?
tell us about that, Neil.
Three guesses and the first two don't count.
There you go. Right.
Je ne sais pas.
Okay.
Can you describe her?
Yeah, I think, was she the one that uses, no, that's not the one that used fans, I don't believe.
I think
Sally Rand used the fan feathers, but anyhow, let's get off that subject.
Sacre bleu.
Continue on, somebody. In 19-
it's a hard act to follow, Dorothy.
Okay, guys, let's get back on track.
All right.
Leap year at Easton for the years in 1928, with the completion of Lighted Airways between New York and Atlanta, the inaugural flight of airmail for Pitcairn Aviation was made on the night of May 1, 1928. Because of the heavy volume of mail, a double schedule was arranged. PA-5 mail wings flew north. Two from Atlanta, Captain Gene Brown was first in the air, and one from Greensboro, and two flew south from the New York area. In 1936, male-only flight attendants, then called stewards, were added to the flight crew. On December 1, 1936, Eastern started flying the New Orleans-Houston route, obtained when Wendell Williams Airline was purchased. REPA member Doug Worthen is the last remaining Wendell Williams pilot still living. In 1940, service was extended from Nashville to St. Louis via Evansville. Service was started into LaGuardia Airport. In June, Eastern operated the first air carrier flight into the new Washington Airport. Crew on the first DC-3 flight into Washington were Captain R. Tucker and co-pilot Jerry Wood. Captain Dick Dice took a leave of absence to fly a private plane around the world. Captain Andy McDonough flew a P-39 to a record 620 miles per hour in a dive on a test flight. Executive offices were moved to the new EAL building in Rockefeller Center. Shushan Airport was renamed New Orleans Airport. At the end of 1940, there were 134 captains and 154 pilots. There were a total of 1,946 employees and 37 planes. George, what was going on in 1944 and beyond that?
Well, in 1944, Captain Rickenbacker signed a contract with Curtiss Wright for 10 CW-20s, which are better known as C-46s, which were later canceled. Also, he signed for 14 Constellations and some additional DC-4s from the Navy. In 1948, the new Eastern theme in that year was double dependability. One was for aircraft and the other was for personnel. In 1952, service started with the new Martin 404s. At the beginning of 1952, Eastern had 63 DC-3s. Newark Airport was closed temporarily, and operations were moved to Idlewild. The airline carried 2.875 million passengers that year. In 1956, Colonial Airlines was acquired in June, following proceedings that began several years earlier. The next leap year was 1960, when the first DC flight took off on January 24th. Major building program at the Miami base with new jet hangar and engine overhaul shops with jet test cells were undertaken. New terminals were built at Atlanta and Miami opened. Sarasota added to system in January with Captain Jack Lambie on the first flight. The airline carried 8.96 million passengers with a fleet of 208 aircraft. In 1964, the first Boeing 727 in service by any airline took place on February 1st. The first 727 with passengers flew from Philadelphia to Miami via Washington. In 1968, more aircraft were purchased in that period, with 17 DC-861s and 6 DC-863s added. Art Lewis was named president, and Mr. Floyd Hall became chairman and CEO. Steve?
Yes, in 1972, Eastern first with the new Lockheed L-1011, April 26, 1972, New York to Miami. The L-1011 accident in the Everglades near Miami on December 29, 1972. And Delta takes over Northeast Airlines. 11 L-1011s in service by the end of 1972. 1976, Floyd Hall's 12-year contract expired in December 1976, and he left, leaving Frank Borman as CEO and COO. In-flight movies started. Total aircraft now 250 with 29 L-1011s. Now, in 1980, Eastern number one in passenger boarding for 1980 with 39.152 million for second year in a row. New terminal opened in Atlanta. Jet fuel costs were up 51.1% over 1979. New reservations offices were opened in Salt Lake City and Tampa. Employees were now 40,500 with 275 aircraft. 1984 added 7 new cities. Get up and go passport developed for senior citizens. Frequent flyer bonus program doubled over 1983 program. Service to Peru stopped in May due to a disagreement between U.S. and Peru. And we added 1,300 full-time employees. Now have 284 airplanes in the fleet. And our loss for the year was $37.9 million. October 19, 1988, Eastern agrees to sell the shuttle to Donald Trump. We've heard that name recently. For $365 million. February 8, 1992, in a week-long auction starting February 3rd at Miami International Airport, Eastern auctioned off 5 jet aircraft, 2 Boeing 727s, and 3 DC-9s, plus a variety of other equipment such as radar systems, de-icing equipment, baggage handling systems, passenger loading bridges, test equipment, and machine tools. The 5 aircraft were sold for $8.6 million, with one of the DC-9s bringing $3.5 million. And the auction was handled by Norman Levy Associates. Chuck.
And what would leap year be without a little form of humor? What do athletes wear on leap day? Jumpsuit. Where do people eat on leap day? IHOP. What kind of music do you listen to on leap day? Hip hop. What do Chinese call the year of the frog? Leap year. What do you tell a hitchhiker on leap day? Hop in. What is a frog's favorite time of year? Leap day. What do you call a surgery on leap day? A hopperation. I wasn't going to celebrate leap day, but I decided to jump on the bandwagon. My coworker was fired on leap day. Apparently, he picked the wrong time to jump off the deep end. I'm going to skip the other one. I'm going to get married on February the 29th. so I only have to remember our anniversary once every 4 years. The general rule is there is a leap year for every 4 years, except if the year is divisible by 100, 2100, 2200. Not exactly divisible by 400, 2000. On February the 29th, 1940, Hattie McDonald became the first African-American to win the Academy Award for her role as Mammy in Gone with the Wind. A person who is born on February the 29th is called a leapering, a leaper year baby. Rapper LaRue. Hey, I'm not the only one that doesn't know French.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Antonio Zapata Jr., 1972, and hockey goalie Cam Ward, 1984, were all born on leap day. Singer Davy Jones, 2012, he was part of the Monkey Band. And legendary college football Tom Davies, 1972, died on leap day. Julius Caesar and his astronomer, Sergeides, I guess that's how you say it. Sergeides calculated the need for leap in 45 BC. Rare Disease Day, a day to raise awareness for rare diseases, was started on February the 29th, 2008. There's a popular tradition called Bachelor's Day in certain countries that allow women to propose marriage on February the 29th. If a man refuses, he is obligated to give the woman money or buy her a dress. Has anybody got any discussions on these little tidbits that I was trying to pronounce?
I'm sure I had a problem like you do.
Rapper is
Ja Rule. Ja Rule, yeah. Ja Rule, okay. I heard the French, we're going to leave the French due to lack of interest.
Do what, Jim?
Say, I heard we were going to do away with French due to lack of interest.
Do away with French due to lack of interest, yeah.
Well, I'm sure my friend in Toronto could probably...
he cringed all the way.
Well, he usually listens in, and sometimes he calls in, but he's not on our board tonight, so maybe he's listening in.
So Renee's not on here.
Yeah, Renee. If we've offended anybody in Canada, please forgive us.
Right.
It wasn't
on there for sure.
Guys,
yeah.
You know that the next time we have leap year is going to be in 2020. It's going to be on a Saturday.
Okay,
then
we got
another
planned.
One in 2024 and 2028 and 2032.
Let me ask
George,
this question.
George, what do you think?
Do you have those statistics on your computer that you brought up, Dorothy?
Oh, about the Julian calendar?
Yeah.
Well, did anyone know that Japan replaced its lunar solar calendar with a Gregorian calendar in January of 1873, but still decided to use the number of months it originally had?
Good
and then
them.
The Republic of China adopted the Gregorian calendar in January 1912, but it wasn't used in China due to warlords using different calendars. However, the national government formally decreed the adoption of the Gregorian calendar in January of 1929. Also, they say that today's Gregorian calendar uses more accurate leap year formula than the Julian. So that's a brand new one that's out. However, it is not perfect either. Compared to the tropical year, it is off by one day every 3,236 years.
I've got a question for anyone out there. How does leap year affect the daylight savings time?
I don't think it affects it at all.
Yeah, maybe 0.1% of a second.
Okay. Well, I think that's probably why they went to the leap year, because isn't that called vernal equinox or winter solstice or something like that, that the days change? Where it skips several days?
I guess. Sounds good, Dorothy. A lot of research done there. Yeah. Any other great events happening or anything happened to you in your life on leap year? Or do you know any leapers or leap year babies, as they are called? Does anyone know of anyone that was born on February 29th?
I don't.
Apparently not. You know, if my wife was going to deliver on the 28th, I think I would say, please hold it, hold it, hold it, hold it.
Hey, you know what, Neil? I'm just curious. I just happened to think of this. What effect did it have on payroll as far as overtime or hours flown or whatever? Does anybody know that?
Well, if you were paid annually, you'd miss a day of pay, I guess.
Yeah.
You had a straight, if you were paid straight. Now, like you guys that are paid by flight hours and ground hours, that wouldn't make any difference.
Right.
But did they have to staff the airline with more pilots in a leap year for that reason?
You know,
exactly, yeah.
Good idea, yeah.
Well, according to what they say in issues out here, the Gregorian calendar took about 300 years just to get everybody to get into the Gregorian calendar. France didn't start until 1582. Austria and Germany started in 1583. There were a lot that went all the way to 1916. That was Bulgaria. And Russia didn't do it until 1918.
Mm-hmm.
1927 was the last of the group to follow in, and that was in 1927 with Turkey. So that was pretty interesting. I didn't really realize that either.
Yeah. God, this is exciting, isn't it? This day that we're in now.
My wife is so smart.
The final word before we talk about another subject, I want to hear Jim Hart. I want to hear Jim Hart. What do you have to say about this?
I'm here, Neil. What did you want?
I want your last words on the subject of leap year.
Well, I think it would have been real nice if a lady had proposed to me instead of the other way around.
Oh, you know,
I don't want a lady proposing to me.
A lot of people.
Yeah, Jim, but you got to realize your parents are going to have to come up with a dowry.
Oh, that's right, too. I forgot about that.
During the show, somebody mentioned Sadie Hawkins Day, I think.
I did.
Sadie Hawkins Day. A lot of people that are younger than we are presently on the radio show talking don't know how old our listeners are, but many of us remember Sadie Hawkins Day. Can any of the elders in the crowd tell me from what comic strip that originated?
Wow.
Well, I wasn't around to remember Sadie Hawkins Day. I heard about it, but
yes, you,
I wasn't
yes, you were around, Dorothy.
Now, I probably am the youngest here.
Little Abner.
Who said that?
Chuck
Little
did.
Little Abner, right.
Chuck
I remember
did.
That.
Little Abner, Sadie Hawkins Day.
Yeah, that was on TV.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's where the, well, at any rate, it was interesting. I wish Little Abner was back. That was such good humor. That was in cartoon form, did a wonderful job. Anybody want to tell me who wrote the and did the Little Abner script? Can you tell me that, Chuck?
Mm-hmm.
You?
I know it, but I don't remember his
what
name.
What was his name?
Gee, something?
Nope.
Schultz is Charlie Brown, right?
Right. Steve, you ought to know this one, Steve, or Jim Grayville. Golly, you're old.
I don't.
Frank, you're sitting up there in New York right now, and you know that, Frank.
Yeah, I don't remember.
not going to give my age away.
No. His first name was Al.
Oh, yes. He wrote, yes, I know who you mean. He was kind of a receding hair, bald-headed guy.
Well, he was a great cartoonist, and his name for years and years, he was a leading cartoonist.
Cap.
At Little Abner, Daisy May, and, of course, Sadie Hawkins, and all the characters by Al Cap.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Boy, you learn a lot on this radio show.
I'm telling you.
Okay, well, what it does, it makes your recall come back a little bit.
That's right. That's what we try to do, get recall. Yes. Yeah, in gear here. We had an event that is taking place, I think, tomorrow. I think it's taking place tomorrow. And we are going to talk about it next, because we've just about done leap year pretty good.
We just killed that one.
Now we'll talk about an airplane that most all with Eastern Airlines dearly loved. It was a wonderful aircraft that Floyd Hall set into motion with Eastern. And I think it was Floyd Hall, but at any rate, we're going to talk a little about George. Would you introduce a little bit about what we're going to talk about next?
Sure. We're going to speak about the very first Boeing 727's last flight. Okay, you got that now? The first one's...
Gotcha.
First one built, the last flight. And it, more than 50 years after its maiden voyage, the very first Boeing 727 ever built will take its very last flight on Tuesday, March 1st, that's tomorrow, weather permitting. I guess it's not certified for IFR anymore. The 727 will fly from Payne Field to Boeing International Field, both in Washington State. From there, the plane will go on permanent display at the adjacent Museum of Flight, where it will help kick off Boeing's centennial celebration at the museum. The aircraft came out of the factory on November 27, 1962, and took its first flight from Renton Field to Payne Field, the opposite route of tomorrow's flight, on February 9, 1963. It worked as a test vehicle for a year until it was delivered to United Airlines on October 6, 1964, where the aircraft stayed until it was retired in 1991. During its 27-year career, the plane flew 64,495 hours, made 48,060 landings. I bet you some of those are really good ones, and carried an estimated 3 million passengers. There are a lot of people who thought this plane would never fly again. During its dormant 25 years, the first 727 underwent on-again, off-again renovations. Many parts were missing, and the process was quite time-consuming. There are a lot of people who thought this plane would never fly again, said Bob Bogash, the leader of the renovation. But the plane is finally ready to take off for its final flight. The 35-mile journey will mark an important moment in aviation history. The 727 had an illustrious career, even though many were unsure of the aircraft when it first came online. The three-engine system and T-tail design differentiated it from the other aircraft of the time. On the 727, Boeing completely changed the shape of the wings from the norm. Triple-slot flaps came from the back edge and leading-edge devices in front of the wings. But the protrusions disappeared and retracted while in flight, allowing the aircraft to fly faster than 600 miles per hour. The plane, which was designated specifically for smaller airports and shorter runways, didn't attract much initial interest. So to help spur sales, Boeing sent the 727 on an international 76,000-mile tour. After that, the sales poured in. Boeing continued producing 727s. I believe it was four or five different models, until 1984. A total of 1,832 planes were built, making it the first commercial airplane to break the 1,000 sales mark. That's according to Boeing. The 727 would become a historic part of the 1970s and aviation and 80s aviation. It was a multi-purpose aircraft used for commercial aviation, cargo. It became a vital part of the FedEx fleet, with many of their jets former Eastern QCs, and also private flights. In the 1990s, Donald Trump flew in his own personal 727. Wow. There are still 69 Boeing 727s in service, according to the 2015 World Airliner Census. For those who want to witness the final 727's last flight, the Museum of Flight will broadcast the event live via Periscope. As a final note, the very first Boeing 727 operated by any airline was by Eastern Airlines on February 1st, 1964. Now, I'm sure most of us here have flown that, so let's talk about the 727 for just a little bit here.
Hey, Dale.
I have a 727 story for landing in Washington that may be of interest.
Hang on a second, Steve, and let's hear what Don and Steve, you're up next. Don, you spoke first.
Just a quick update. I was a gate agent in Miami, and I've said this before. I worked a flight 6, aircraft 101 to Newark from Miami. The airplane took off with 101 passengers, and we got a call like 10 minutes later that the right landing gear wouldn't retract or extend. And as a result, Captain Young landed the airplane on the runway in Miami with just the one gear hanging down. Also, 2 months later, aircraft 102 flown by Captain Roach landed in Albuquerque, New Mexico with the same problem. You guys in maintenance probably know more about this than I do, but I thought I'd just bring that up.
Well, Steve, you've got a story, and then I've got something to say. Go ahead, Steve.
Well, I was kind of known, at least within my own head, as a kind of a maverick and who would take chances with passengers on board on airplanes that I flew with Eastern. Well, one of those events was landing in Washington on runway 33 just after a cold front had gone through, and it was about a 25 to 30 knot wind out of the northwest right down runway 33. Well, I had kind of perfected a technique for just before touchdown, just before landing, it extending the reversers and putting the engines in reverse just prior to touchdown.
Wow.
This did several things. It deflected the downdraft and made it additional cushion for the airplane to land on. For a softer landing, but it also extended a lot of drag. So
Steve,
landing on runway 33, I decided I could turn down runway, I believe it's runway 22.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah, Steve, it sounds pretty good, but they never did put that procedure in our flight manual.
No, they didn't. But the tower and everybody was oohing and hawing.
How did you do that?
After I turned down that runway, which was only 1,500 feet from the end.
Yeah, FAA is listening in here.
They've already punched my ticket.
I wish I'd known that, because it really gets dirty to change them buckets on them engines.
You know, it's the funny thing, like Steve was saying, that the wind, when we did have a wind that came out of the Pentagon, which was runway 33, when we had a wind that was coming from that direction, and usually it was gusting pretty good, the tower says,
yeah.
Eastern, you're clear to land on runway 33. Or if you prefer, you can land on 36. Well, you know, we'd rather land on 36 because it's probably about 4,000 feet longer. And most of the guys says, okay, we're clear to land. They wouldn't about accept 36 when they were cleared on 33. They were going to show their airmanship by landing on that short runway. And folks, when I say it was short because if you ran out of runway, you were in the Pentagon.
Steve, this is Jim. Don't I remember that on any of the aircraft where you could reverse the engines, you couldn't reverse the engines until the wheels were on the runway because the micro switches wouldn't allow you to do it.
Sounds good to me, Jim.
On some aircraft, that was correct, especially the Martin 404.
talking about the 727 first flight, that first Boeing 727 has photos of it on the internet, www.airlinereporter.com, and it shows the first flight that ever took, 1962, and it has a lot of other photos that you folks might like to take a look at. Very interesting.
Very good, Dorothy. You know,
Does anyone know how our airplane got the name Whisper Jet?
That was a marketing
on the inside, but not on the outside, that's for sure.
Yeah. No,
Whisper Jet.
It was Floyd Hall and a man that he had working in the Home Office by the name of Max Heisig, decided that they would have a contest among all the Eastern employees. So they put out the word, and I believe it was a mechanic in Miami that came up with the word Whisper Jet.
Very good. Very good, Jim. I think I remember a contest about that, come to think of it.
Hey, Jim, just to let you know, that's called the ground proximity switch, and it's in the left wheel well.
And GPS, John, to answer your question, that was the gear sequencing valve that went out on both of those aircraft, and the landing gear got stuck in the gear door.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, the door would open, the gear would go up, and then the door would close.
Yeah,
when the sequencing valve didn't work properly, then the gear got stuck in the landing gear door.
So they had to rework all about 40 airplanes.
Yeah.
Now that valve was right up in that left
101 and 102.
101 and 102, yeah. That was the first aircraft.
Good question.
Anybody ever stall a 727 full stall?
Yeah, I know you did. Jim Grayville.
That's not good.
I didn't.
I heard
about 100, man,
but
I'll never know the
radio
truth.
Show. Yeah.
Would you guys like to have that hyperlink? I'll send it to you.
Yeah, that sounds good. Just type in your browser the Boeing flight and the first 727. By the way, George, Jen, you mentioned in what you were talking about four different models or more. Can you name those models of the 727?
Oh, gosh. Well, you had the 100, the QC, the 200 series.
Right.
And then there were several different engines on the 200 series.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds good
dash
to me.
Dash
7s
for one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the first one.
Was it the dash 51 that was went into La Paz?
No, I think that was a dash 17A or B engine.
Oh, that's
on
okay.
There.
You're right. You're right.
By the way, here's something that you probably did not know, any of you guys. Do you know what fuselage was used for the 727 to get it out ahead of its competition, de Havilland?
Mm-mm.
What did Eastern have as far as Boeing aircraft prior to the 727.
720.
The 720. The 720. The 720 is the fuselage they use on the 727.
Oh, didn't know that.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that. I'm looking at the information. By the way, if you guys would really want to know about Eastern Aircraft and the airline itself and all the presidents and the history of the airline, I would highly recommend that you get a book. Call Eastern Airlines, or correction, Eastern, an airline and its aircraft, written by, and copy this down, because you can probably put it in your internet browser and you can find it and buy it. It's a wonderful book of Eastern's aircraft, color, beautiful color. It's R, the initials are R.E.G. Davies, D-A-V-I-E-S, Reg Davies, R-E-G, Davies, D-A-V-I-E-S. And he's done this book, and I think he did one on TWA's aircraft and Delta's aircraft, but he did a beautiful job. And it's a wonderful reference book that I can reference and tell you the serial numbers of any aircraft that Eastern ever owned in this book, when it was delivered on the property of Eastern, and when it was sold, and what happened to it. Even those aircraft that R like Reggie, E like Eugene, G like, you know, G Wiz, and Davies. Yeah, all R.E.G. Davies, D-A-V-I-E-S.
.com or?
No, that's what you would look in there for Eastern, this Eastern book. I don't know. There's
right,
no
I got
dot
it.
.com. Yeah, this was written about 20 years ago. And right after, but before Eastern folded, this book was out. And I think the EARA, Vito Borelli, it was pretty much advertised about the book. I don't know who sent me a copy. I think I was the editor of the REPA magazine at the time when someone sent me this copy. And it is a wonderful, wonderful book. It tells you about all the companies that Eastern ever merged with and all the aircraft they had, the presidents of the airline. It's a wonderful history of our wonderful carrier, Eastern Airlines. So I highly recommend that you research that and buy the book. I'm sure you can find it on the internet, and it cost it. According to mine, it says price in the U.S. $35. I bet you can buy it on Amazon.com. Well, a lot less than that. But the title of it again is Eastern, an airline, and its aircraft. A wonderful book to have in your library if you're an Eastern employee. Yes, sir.
This is Jim. As you're talking, a vision sort of flashed before me, and it was at the time that Arthur Godfrey, of course, was known very well by Captain Eddie, and Arthur Godfrey was a pilot. I believe he had a C-47, but isn't there a picture that I remember of him behind the controls of a Super Connie with, I think, with either Captain Eddie or our famous pilot who flew with the ping pong balls in the airplane?
Yeah, Dick Merrill. Jim,
Dick Merrill,
go to our website.
Absolutely.
Yeah, go to our website, EALradioshow.com. Go to videos, and Flying with Godfrey is what you want to see as far as the video. It's about a 30-minute video, Flying with Godfrey, Arthur Godfrey. And, yes, it had the co-pilot was Dick Merrill, and it talked about Eddie Rickenbacker flew his SPAD up underneath the wings of the Connie and got out of the airplane and No, I'm sorry. He was on the ramp. It's a great movie, and it's on our website under videos. Just go to videos and find in that long list of videos. We got 71 videos on our website, so pick out, I think it's the very top one, Flying with Godfrey, I believe. If I'm not mistaken, last time I saw it.
Neil, I've got the book. I'm just looking at it right now. It's a great book, and everybody should have it.
Yeah, everybody should have
Amazon
this.
It's on Amazon for $36.93.
Okay.
What, did you have it delivered by drone?
These days, you may.
Hey, Neil.
But I'll tell you what. Yeah.
Just quickly before we go off the air. I was going to ask you, do you remember the DH-63 flights, the DCH flights, the China and the steak and lobster flights in first class?
Yeah. Yeah, it was not just on the DC-8, Don. It was on several of our flights, many of our flights. And remember what we called the flights?
On the 727 a lot.
Yeah, do you remember what we call those flights?
I'm not sure what we called them, but I'll send you a picture of the inaugural flight from Miami to JFK with myself and Dick Merrill and some other people there.
Oh, wonderful. I didn't know you were that popular to be in all the ads with Dick Merrill and those guys. That's great, Don. I would appreciate any kind of picture like that.
Well, that would
be super.
Neil, we used to have that kind of chow on the Electra, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah. Let me recommend that you go to the EALradioshow.com, and on the home page, just to the left of the Ray Valdez tragedy of Flight 980, which we've talked on several of our past shows, Flight 980. And by the way, it's up to 800 and about 30 viewers since we posted it on the Internet. And right to the left of that, I've placed another video, a very important video. And a lot of the stuff that we talked about tonight, the 727 and the famous dinner flights that we had catered, and all about that, right next to it. Click on that, and it's about a 55-minute movie that I didn't even know existed until Norma Jean Borger sent me an email with that video and wanted to see if I could do something with it, and I put it on the very home page. So there are two videos there. I highly recommend that you look at that video. It's a wonderful video. It was produced. The project Boyd Hall when he first came with the airline. And you'll see so many people that you may even identify knowing these people in your various departments, because it takes you around the Eastern system back in 1968. And a wonderful, wonderful movie. About 55 minutes, and it takes you all the way through the change of uniforms of the flight attendants and the famous dinner flights that we had, and who catered those flights, and just spend about 55 minutes and enjoy Eastern Airlines back in the 60s, if you dated that far back.
Neil,
yes,
Steve.
Sir, Steve, yeah.
It's interesting. My son is a pilot with American Airlines, and he is flying that trip from Miami to La Paz to Santa Cruz. That's on his bid now. So I have told him about Ray Valdez video, and he has seen that. So it's interesting.
Yeah, I'd like to hear his comments about that, Steve. If you can get him to come on our show to any time in the future, please do so, because your son, the last time we have on our show, we were all very impressed. First of all, he's got a great communication voice, and he delivers very well the subject that he talks about. He's really good. He ought to be on the radio, our radio.
I will pass that along to him.
Yeah, I'd like to hear his comments about flying that trip if he goes into La Paz.
All right.
George, you might want some comments from him also.
Yeah, well, I guess it's a little bit late for that, but I'd sure be interested in hearing what he has to say. You know, when the Braniff pilots flew that trip, they remained at 24,000 feet until they were over the airport, and only then would they begin their descent. And Eastern never did that. I guess had that happened, who knows what the outcome would have been, you know.
If, in fact, it was flying era.
Well, that's what I mean,
We don't really know.
Nope, we don't.
Yeah, not until a proper investigation is conducted. And hopefully this might be the year. And we've got several things going for us. And hopefully some people will take notice and do some investigating of this tragedy.
Hopefully. You're right.
Yeah. How are you doing on your new book, George?
It's coming along. I'm working with a doctor on another book with him, so I'm actually doing two. And one thing I discovered is that it's very, very difficult to switch back and forth. So I haven't really decided whether to complete mine first or to work with him first, you know?
Yeah. Well, anyone else would like to make a comment at this time?
Neil, if anybody's interested, I've got a thing on my computer that's got every airplane that Eastern flew and the paint schemes and so forth on.
Okay, very good. So what's your website, if you've got a website, Jim Graybill?
It's on the Eastern Retired Eastern Pilots Association, REPA.
Oh, on REPA, yeah. Dorothy is helping me restructure our website. You know, it's about 6 or 7 years old. It needs to be given a facelift, and she's agreed to help me, and she's done.
If you get into REPA, Neil, it's on, let me see here real quick, REPA Gallery.
EARadioshow.com, except I don't have them completed yet. I don't know, something just got me off course and I didn't finish it out, but we've got a lot of the original aircraft all the way up. I tried to include them chronologically when they came on the property with Eastern and a little story about each one. But, yeah, it's really good. And that's what Reg Davis has done with this book, Eastern and Airline and its Aircraft. He's done a wonderful hardback. It's not a softback. It's a hardback. Wonderful wonderful presentation of that. And,
beautiful, really.
Yeah. But Dorothy is working up a new home. Well, actually, we're going to have it easier with over 40 pages that we have of different things on the website. We want to kind of categorize them and put several of them on tabs so you can click a tab, and underneath that tab you will see the different pages that are on the radio show's website, and you'll be able to go right to it, because right now it's just kind of haphazard, and you know, you just have to hit more button, and you have to slide down and pick out a subject. We've got so many pages in there that we want to kind of bring them into a category of pages. That's what Dorothy has done so well. And so it'll probably be up within the next couple of weeks. And just as a reminder to our listening audience that we do have scheduled now and locked in a reunion in September of this year. The dates are September 23rd, 24th, and 25th. And we're having our second annual Eastern Airlines Pioneers reunion and celebration and banquet. And it's being held this year in Fort Lauderdale, again, a very good venue for this type of convention or reunion for Eastern people, because there's so many people in Southeast Florida, Fort Lauderdale being a good site to have the convention. And we've chosen this time the Embassy Suites, which is right there on the 17th Street Causeway. And at the Embassy Suites, they're offering all of our people that are coming to our reunion that will be staying in the hotel. They'll have a free breakfast and free happy hour and hors d'oeuvres in the evening. And along with that, all that we are offering with our reunion, which is about, well, it's a number of things that we're going to offer all of those that will be attending the second annual reunion of the Pioneers, Eastern Pioneers, and the new Eastern Airlines employees. So we've got some great entertainment, a banquet that will be honoring two people, and we will offer this at a very attractive price of $125 for the 2 days, or actually 3 days if you arrive on the opening day. And we'll have so many different things that we'll offer during those 3 days that we're there. Two nights, and we've negotiated a price down to $129 per night. So if there are two people in the room, you're going to be getting a very good deal. And also, you'll have a free breakfast in the morning, full breakfast. You can even tell the cook to cook the omelet according to the way you want it cooked, and a full breakfast. And then in the evening, you'll sit around the atrium of the Embassy Suites. And I think everyone knows the luxurious surroundings in the Embassy Suites. It's really a good place for people to sit, talk, and in this case, we'll be talking about Eastern Airlines and enjoy our friendship and meeting people again. And we're already getting some calls for people that have found out that we're going to do it again this year. And so we'll be sending out emails. And have I forgotten anything, Dorothy?
Yes, the registration fee is $125. You mentioned that. The $129 room comes with not only the breakfast, but there's a happy hour every afternoon or evening at from 5 to 6. So that's well worth it. The hotel itself is absolutely beautiful. It has a gorgeous atrium and heated pools. It's large for any kind of an event, so I'm sure our rooms are going to be great. And it's, you know, right close to the beaches, and they have a concierge on hand to help you out with any kind of tours that you might want to take.
Dorothy, I might add that this year we have a sponsor right now already signed up to help us and to give us some extra benefits that we didn't realize on our first annual. And so we'll be announcing that a sponsor and what they've got planned for us as well. And we're looking for that second sponsor as well. So we'll be giving more than just what we did last year. I think
right.
You'll really enjoy this year's reunion. And it's for everyone. It's for the pioneers, and it's for the, well, I guess with the new airline, I guess any employee now with the new Eastern Airlines is considered a pioneer also. Wouldn't you say that's correct?
That sounds good to me.
Okay. All right.
And there's also, they give a rate also, the same rate from September 20th to September 27th. So if people want to take a week's vacation, they're still going to get that same rate as long as they book before August 23rd. That's the deadline for the block of rooms that you have reserved. And if anything after that's going to go up substantially because you get into October season down here. So.
And yeah, you're around $200 a night. Yeah, so it's going to be a lot of fun. And we would like you to be prepared to receive an email from us if you're a member of our radio show website. We'll be sending out to over 900 members now. I hope that by the end of this year, my goal is to have 1,000 members by the end of this year. So don't think that's unreasonable, but we started out with one member, and that was yours truly. And then we picked up some members, and we've grown up to 912, I think, the latest I've seen on the website. And they get our e-blast every radio show, before every radio show Monday nights. So you'll be getting information about our reunion in September.
Right, and also on the reunion information, it gives you the hyperlink to get to the hotel. And it tells you your radio show code, which is AEA, to take advantage of the $129 room rate.
Very good, very good. Going to have fun. So, folks, all of you guys listening and all of you hosts, plan to be there. We had fun last year. We're going to have more fun this year, I guarantee. Okay. Wow. What a radio show we've had tonight. Let's bring this aircraft in for a landing.
Landing, Captain Neil. We had a great show tonight, folks. You know, it's always fun when we talk about Eastern Airlines and the place we worked. And now we can talk about the new Eastern Airlines. You know, we feel we've truly earned the title of the radio voice of Eastern Airlines. And it's all because of you, our callers, our listeners, our guests, and hosts. We hope you'll join us next Monday, March the 7th, when we broadcast our 256th show. That's 6 years now, folks. And while we're traveling aboard our new Eastern Airlines radio show, Boeing 737-800. Now, from all of us here and all of us all over the world, we say good night, Eastern. We love you, Eastern Airlines.
Good night, Eastern. We love you, Eastern.
We love you.